All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Samech Gimel, beautiful daf ahead of us. We're going to be picking up on Samech Beis Mabeis. So today's daf is 63, Samech Gimel. We're picking up on Samech Beis Mabeis, 62b, 2, 4, 5 lines up from the bottom. A Baruch Haba to Morty Spiro. Welcome back, Morty. Just got back from Eretz Yisrael. Baruch Hashem. Happy to have you back. Hope you had a wonderful summer. All right, we'll say let's begin. So remember, again, just to give us a little bit of context, so we were speaking about the Mishnah, and this opening Mishnah of the Perek was contrasting the financial penalties of Kefel, which is a double payment for a Ganav, versus Arba V'Chamisha, the 4 and 5 times penalty payment, which is unique to a case of where someone steals a shor or a seh, slaughters it, and sells it. So the Mishnah was contrasting these two particular financial penalties. So remember again, one of the things that the Mishnah spoke out was that the midah of kefel, or the punishment of kefel, is different because kefel applies to everything. As opposed to arba v'chamisha, the 4 and 5 penalty payments, which only applies to livestock. So kefel applies to all items, no matter what you steal. Bal chayim, living item, not a living item, makes no difference. So we saw yesterday, the Gemara learned that out, from a klal uprat uklal. So you remember again, the klal, so just very quickly, it was akol davar pesha, for any matter of iniquity, so that's a klal, al shor al chamor al sevi al salmo. So then when the Torah is specific regarding the items, whether it's a shor, an ox, a chamor, a donkey, a seh, a sheep, or an article of clothing, that's the prat, and then it says akol aveda, for any lost item, chazar v'kalal, that's the klal upratu klal, and therefore the Gemara posited, klal upratu klal, iata din elekeina prat. So also whenever you have a klal upratu klal, ultimately again, the klal is modified by the prat. Therefore, for our purposes, what does that mean? Maha prat mefurash davra metal to the gufa mamon. So just like the prat is something that is movable, A, and is inherently has a value, so to anything that is movable and inherently has a value is subject to the laws of kefal. Fine. With that, ima prat mefurash, the Gemara says, well, why don't you say the following? Why don't you say, maybe the prat is something, davra shenivel also metal mevimago masa. So we'll say, if you look at the prat, so the prat of shor, The prat of shor, chamor, and seh, a common denominator is that all of them, the carcass, conveys tumah through direct contact and through carrying. Why don't you say af kol davar shenivelaso metamei magoa maasa? Aval ofos lo. So to say, any item that transmits tumah through maga, through touching, or through masa, or through carrying, is subject to the laws of kefel. What does this come to exclude? This would come to exclude ultimately ofos. This would come to exclude birds, which I will say do not convey tumah through maga and through masa. How can you possibly say that this is the klal? Excuse me, that this is the prat. Vahas salma ksiv. So I will say, here's the problem. To say that kefal only applies to items that transmit tumah through maga and masa is fine, except for one problem. The Torah explicitly includes salma. Salma is an article of clothing. So clothing has nothing to do with tumah, with maga, masa. So how can you limit the items to which kefal apply using this metric? Amri, anor b'mali chayim kaminon. To which the Gemara says, no, we just mean, yes, we understand that kefal applies to salma. We're not disagreeing with that, of course, because the Torah says so. So obviously, kefal applies to inanimate objects as well. We're just suggesting that when looking as to which Baalei Chayim animals kefal applies to, that perhaps kefal only applies to animals that convey tumah through maga and through masa. To which the Gemara says, "Ema Baalei Chayim, davar shenivelos metam maga masa in, davar shenivelos metam maga masa lo." So we'll say now the Gemara is making a suggestion that we should be mechalik, we should distinguish on the pasuk. Yes, everyone will agree that kefal applies to inanimate objects. That's fine. And again, one could even make the argument that it's all the type of inanimate objects that are davar hametaltel, they're movable, and gufa mamon, they inherently have value. But perhaps when it comes to determining which baalei chayim, which animals the laws of kefal apply to, we look at a paradigm created by shor, chamor, and seh. What is the common denominator between shor, chamor, and seh? These are all items that their carcass conveys tumah through maga and through masa, through carrying and through touching, So too, only an animal that conveys tumah through its carcass through maga and masa will be subject to the laws of kefal. Top of Samech Gimel. So the Gemara says, "Da kochad v'chad klal uprat ba'an pe'nafshe darshinale." So we'll say essentially what we'll do is will make a separate klalu prat, or klalu pratu klal, for animals, and a separate klalu pratu klal for inanimate objects. But either way, the bottom line is that birds would be excluded from this. Therefore, again, according to this limud, if you were to steal a bird and to be discovered, ultimately, again, you'd have to pay keren, you'd have to pay back the principal, but there would be no obligation to go ahead and pay kefel. So the Gemara says, imke nichtav rachman achad prata, if that's the case, why do you have to say shar, chamar, and seh? Why don't you just say one of them, and one of them would be enough to learn out this principle, but say that it's only items that go ahead and convey tumah through maga and masa that are subject to the laws of kefel, to which the Gemara says, well, hey nichtav, well, let's analyze this. Okay, you say we should only write one. Which one? ברוך אתה אדוני אלוהינו מלך העולם שהכל נהיה בדברו. Which one? Ikas of Rachmana Shar, if it would have just said Shar, Hava Amina, Krav Legabi Mizbeach, and Shein Krav Legabi Mizbeach Lo, I might have thought that what type of animal ultimately, again, is subject to the laws of Kefal, only an animal like a shar. What's unique about a shar, Abosai? That a shar can be offered up on the Mizbeach, so to only an animal that could be offered up on the Mizbeach is subject to the laws of Kefil, V'ikas of Rachmana Chamar, and had the Torah just said Chamar, then I would have thought, Hava Amina Kadosh Bebechora in, Shein Kadosh Bebechora lo, I might have thought that just like a Chamar, Bosai, is unique because it is the only non-kosher animal that has Kedushas Bechor, firstborn sanctity, I would have thought that the only type of animal subject to the laws of Kefil is something that has firstborn sanctity. Now, I'll just point out, obviously, you know, so you ask yourself, I know what you're asking yourself. You're saying, well, what does firstborn sanctity have to do with kefel? The answer is nothing. But what we're trying to figure out over here is, if the Torah were to just write one of these particular animals, what lesson would we extrapolate from the inclusion of the one particular animal? That's the shiloh we're dealing with. So the Gemara is suggesting, had it just said shar, I would have thought only an animal that could be offered up on a mizbeach ultimately is subject to kefil. It would have just said chamar, I would have thought that animal that has kiddushas bechor, firstborn sanctity, should be offered up on the mizbeach. I'm sorry, the only animal that has firstborn sanctity is subject to kefil. Imkein, nichtav rachmana shar v'chamar. So fine, so says the Gemara, so now what you've effectively established is, you cannot have just written one animal. But let's make a suggestion. Why don't you write two out of three? In other words, you have shar, chamar, and seh. Why don't you just write shar and chamar? So the Gemara says, seh lamli, why do I need seh? Shmamino la suye ofos. Oh, Rabosai said, the inclusion of seh, which seems to be extraneous, because remember, again, there is nothing new learned from seh. How so? Because again, if it's about kiddushas bechor, that's already covered by chamar. If it's about ability to be offered up on the mizbeach, that's covered by what? That's covered by shar. So seh is mamish extraneous. So if seh is extraneous, what does it come to teach me? The Gemara says it comes to include birds. It comes to teach me other forms of livestock, namely birds, are also included in the laws of kefel. Ve'ema la'asuye ofos tahorim. But maybe it only comes to include kosher birds. Kosher birds, why? Dumya deseh dimitame bigodim abes habliya. Because Rabbi say maybe birds are like the set. Rabbi say the halacha is, if you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says ve'ima tahorin. It's like in the middle of the page, in the middle of the column of Rashi, ve'ima tahorin. The dami leprata kitzas, the yesh tuma nevelos benevelosam kitzas letame bebeis habliyah. Rabbi say the halacha is that by a let's say whether it's a lamb carcass or an animal carcass. Let's say you have a lamb that died or was killed, not through shechita. So we'll say the halacha is that when you ingest some of that meat has the ability to convey tumah. This carcass meat has the ability to convey tumah to one's clothing and person's abes habliya. Ultimately, again, when you're swallowing it. That halacha applies by seh. That halacha also applies by kosher birds that died without proper shechita. So maybe, why don't you tell me, so the Gemara says, maybe you're telling me now that seh comes to include birds, that birds are also subject to the laws of kefel. Maybe it only comes to include kosher birds, because kosher birds are at least similar to seh. How are they similar to seh? just as if you eat a piece of seh carcass, it conveys tumah ultimately again to your clothing. So too, if you eat some bird carcass, it also conveys tumah. So what the Gemara is just trying to point out over here is you're trying to say that the word seh or that the word seh comes to include all ovos, all birds in the laws of kefal. Perhaps it only comes to include kosher birds in the laws of kefal. Aval ofos tameim delesbu tumah delometayim begad mavi sabli alo. But non-kosher birds are both say, which again, whether you eat them with shechita or without shechita is irrelevant. But lemaisa again, they do not convey tumah to one's clothing when one is swallowing the meat. To which the Gemara says, kol ribuyahu. To which the Gemara says, well, the word kol. Ultimately, again, is a ribuy. Now, Bosa, remember again, the word kol, what they're saying over here is, actually, kol appears twice in the pasuk. Al kol davar pesha, al shor al chamor al seh, al sama, al kol aveda. So the Gemara now is suggesting that the word kol is coming to include something, not exclude something. So therefore, by definition, since seh is extra, and since the word kol is a ribuy, it's coming to include something. What does it come to include? It's coming to include all types of birds that they are subject to kefal. So says the Gemara, is that true? V'chol heichad? Now the Gemara just asks a technical issue. V'chol heichad the kasif kol ribuyahu? Is that true, by the way, that kol is always a ribuy? Right, that kol is always an inclusive word. So the Gemara says, v'ha gabi meiser. Most of this says, what about by meiser sheni? Dichsiv kol. Most remember the pasuk says kol by meiser sheni as well. The v'kadashin alei bichlal uprat. And yet, Rav Osai, we don't darshan kol over there as a ribuy, but rather we darshan kol instead as a klal. So listen to this. We actually had this last week. Tisanyo, the pasuk says, v'nasata kesef b'chol asher taben afshecho. So listen to this. The Torah is talking about over here, ideally, you would separate your maaser sheni from your crops, and you would go ahead and bring those crops to Yerushalayim to eat them. Remember, maaser sheni is consumed by the owner of the crops. Let's say, Gennabosai, Baruch Hashem, I had a very bountiful year. I don't want to have to schlep the crops up to Yerushalayim. So instead, what do I want to do? I'd like to go ahead and convert the crops. I'd like to be pulled to the maaser sheni with money. I'll take the money up to Yerushalayim, and I'll spend the money in Yerushalayim. So the Torah here discusses, well, what can you use Meiser Sheni money on? So the Torah says, I'll speak to you, the pasuk says, V'nasata kesef b'chol asher taven afshecha, you shall use the money with anything you desire, b'bakar batzon b'yayin b'shechar, with cattle, sheep, wine, shechar literally is beer or intoxicating beverage, u'b'chol asher tish alcha nafshecha, whatever you want. Fine. So listen to this. So the Gemara says, you shall use the money with whatever you want. So Rabbos say again, remember, what do you see? Bechol. You see that word kol. Just keep this in mind. Klal. Rabbos say that is a klal. That is an inclusive statement. A general statement. Not inclusive. General. Babakar ubatzon. Bayayin ubashechar. So yet then it says, with cattle, with sheep, with wine, or with intoxicating beverage. Prat. Now I will say that is a limiting statement, a specific statement. So remember again, Pasuk opens up by saying you could buy whatever you want. Now you would expect buy whatever you want means what? Whatever you want, anything. Then the Torah says, oh, by the way, you can use it to purchase bakar tzon yayin shecha. That's a prat. That's a specification. U'bechol asher tish'alcha nafshecha. Then Rabbi say, and then what happens? With whatever you want, chazar v'kalal. So Rabbi say, this is what we call a klal uprat uklal. A general statement, a specific statement, and another general statement. What's the halacha? Now this is one of the, so klal uprat uklal is one of the exegetical principles, one of the midos, shatorah, and the dreshas. But whenever you see this model, it's to learn something out. So the Gemara says, klal uprat uklal, iya todon, so we'll say, whenever you have a klal upratu klal, the way it works is, the klal, the general statement, is modified by the prat. So the prat is there to modify the klal, to give me the criteria for assessing the klal. So what does this mean? Maha prat mufurash primi pri ugudule karka. But we'll say, just as the prat, bakar, tzon, yayin, shechar, all of those items are pre-mi-pri. Rabbos say they all come from something else. In other words, bakar is born from a mother. Tzon is born from a mother. Wine comes from grapes. Shechar comes, I mean, depending on what kind of shechar they're talking about, you know, generally, you know that when you're talking about biblical, like shechar beer, they're never usually referring to anything produced from grain. Usually it comes from dates. All right, it's not really material for our conversation now, but you understand. So pre-mi-pri, ugiduli karko, and they all grow from the ground, or are nourished from the ground. Af, ko pre-mi-pri, ugiduli karko. Therefore, I will say, anything that comes from something else and grows from the ground, one could use their meiser sheni money for. So I will say, so again, first of all, this is just interesting in general, because often, it sounds often that like klal u'pratu klal and ribui and miut sound like the same thing. But they're not really the same thing at all. So a klal, remember, is a general statement. Prat is a specific statement. So when you have a klal, general statement, specific statement, and another general statement, the specific statement, namely the prat, is there to modify the parameters of the klal. That's what happens over here. So in this case over here, the prat of Maaser Sheni, tzon, bakar, bakar, tzon, yayin, shechar, comes to modify the bechol klal of Maaser Sheni. So the Gemara says, what do you see from here? What do you see from here? The Gemara suggested before that the word kol is a ribui. What is a ribui? A ribui is an inclusive statement. So the Gemara wanted to suggest that by kefel, the word kol teaches me what? Since the word kol appears, even though it says shar, chamar, seh, but the word kol teaches me that's what? That the laws of kefel apply to birds as well. So the Gemara says, but 1 second. So now that was all based on the idea that the word kol is a ribui. Now the Gemara says, but 1 second. Kol is not a ribui. What is kol? Kol is a klal. So also remember, ribui and klal are two different exegetical principles. So how can you say that kol is automatically a ribui? To which the Gemara says, Amri bichol klala, kol ribuya. I will say, to which the Gemara wants to start splitting some hairs over here. So bichol, we see, it depends how the word appears. Bichol is a klal. That ultimately, again, is a general statement. Kol, however, is a ribui. Now, Bosa, remember over here, by kefel, we don't, see, by Maaser Sheni, you have the word bichol, right? Bichol, with whatever you want. By kefel, it has the word kol. So the Gemara suggests over here that kol is a ribui, therefore by kefel, Torah uses the word kol, therefore it's a ribui, it's coming to include something else, it's coming to include the laws of kefel, it's coming to include ofos in the laws of kefel, but yet bichol by Maaser Sheni is not a ribui, instead it's a klal. To which the Gemara says, "Vibay sema kol klalahu." So I'll say, or you could say, on the other hand, that kol ultimately is a klal. Mihu kol dahacharibuyahu. So what's this? Interesting. The other possibility we'll say is, who says that kol always has to be used in the same way? It's possible that more often than not, kol is treated as a klal, but over here by kefel, kol is going to be treated as a ribui. Fine. Michti. So we'll say now the Gemara goes Zaitzer. So Michti, just so you should know, so ultimately we paskin that kefal does apply to ofos. We accept the drasha that the Gemara made, namely, that kefal applies to anything that is gufom mamon and metaltal. That anything that has inherent value and ultimately is movable. And we agree that ultimately it doesn't just apply to shar, chamor, and seh, but it will apply to ofos as well. Fine. So now asks the Gemara, Michti. Let's analyze this for a little bit. Ksiv me'ikara, klal u'pratu klal. So, both, remember again, the pasuk that we just quoted above, which is Shmos Chaf Beis Ches, is structured as a klal u'prat u'klal. Right? It's structured as a general or an inclusive statement, specific statement, and a general and an inclusive statement as well. The ksiv. Now, where do we see this? Look at these psukim. The ksiv. Ki yitin isha re'ehu, klal. So, both, the pasuk says, if a person shall give to his fellow, now that's a statement. The boss said, that's a statement. That's a klal. That's a general statement. Why is it a general statement? Why? Because remember, it refers to any item. So that's a klal. Kesef o kalim, say either money or utensils. That's a prat. That's specific. Lishmar, to guard. Hadar v'kalal. They're both said to watch them. Again, another klal. So remember, now we have a klal uprat uklal. Visakadaitcha. Hi, I'll call Davar Pesha. Nami lichlal uprat hu da'asa. So we'll say, if you want to say that ultimately the pasuk of L'chol Davar Pesha, which is the original pasuk we quoted before, is coming to teach me a klal upratu klal, nichtov rachmana lahani prati gabe heich klal uprat. So the Gemara says, So ultimately, why doesn't the Torah just include that prat by that klal, or by that previous pasuk? Klal uprat, I'll call davar pesha lama. So we'll say, let me clarify what the Gemara is asking. We now have two different psukim. So just to frame this, so pasuk number one, just in the order of the Torah, is the pasuk we just quoted over here, which is Shmos Chaf Beis Vav. The pasuk reads, Ki yitein ish areehu kesef al kelim lishmar, v'gunav mi beis ha'ish, imimatsi ha'ganav yishalim shnayim. So the Torah says, I give my friend something to watch, kesef or kelim. The items were stolen. The thief is found. The thief has to pay kefa, has to pay double. That's pasuk number one. Pasuk number two, Abba, is the pasuk that we've been dealing with this entire time, which is Shmos Chaf Beis Ches. So two psukim later. That's where the Torah says, Al kol davar pesha, al shar, al chamar, al se, al sama, al kol aveda, asher yomar kihuzeh, So just to understand, the first pasuk we quoted is talking about a case where I'm giving over an object to my friend, and he's watching it. Somebody stole it from his home. Then they find the ganav. The ganav pays kefal. Pasuk number two is talking about a situation where I deposit something with someone. He claims that he no longer has it, and the Torah demands that he take a shavua. If it then turns out that lamaisa what? He was lying and he had it, that lochas he has to pay kefal. The Gemara is essentially just asking, why do I need both of these cases? So the Gemara says, V'saka da'itcha, hai akol davar pesha, nami lichlalu pratu da'asa, nichtov rachmana lahani prati gabi heich klal upratu klal. I'll call Dover Pesha Lamali. So we'll say, why do I need these two separate psukim? Why do I need this extra call Dover Pesha? Shmamina Ribuyuhu. To teach you, I'll say ultimately again that it's a ribuy, that it's coming to include additional items. Ha hashta da amrit kol ribuya. So the Gemara says, kol hani prati lamali. If that's the case, ultimately, now that we have this additional ribuy, why do I need all of these specific examples, all of these pratim? To which the Gemara says, oh, I'll tell you, chag lemi ute karka. So we'll say one prat comes to exclude land. So we'll remember again, the halacha is that if you go ahead and you quote-unquote steal land, there is no din of kefal, right? The din of kefal doesn't apply to stolen land, which Rabbi Sarada, we've touched on this earlier, the whole ability or the whole impossibility of stealing land in general. Okay, but leaving that aside, there's no kefal when it comes to land. One is to exclude avadim. They will say if a person steals an eved, they're not subject to kefal. The chalim ute shtaros, and one is to exclude shtaros. Was that if you steal a shtar, then lemaisik you're not subject to kefal as well. To which the Gemara says, Salma lemiute davar shenu musuyim. So we'll say, why does the Torah specifically say Salma? Speaking about an article of clothing, it comes to exclude something that doesn't have defined simanim. Well, in other words, that if let's say something is stolen and the owner can't identify the item with any identifying marks, in other words, there are no simanim, no distinctive simanim on the object, that object is not subject to the laws of kefal. So the Gemara says, akol aveda. So what does the phrase akol aveda teach you? So I'll say, understand what's happening over here. Now, essentially, we have two psukim that seem to be saying the same thing. And both of them have a riboy and a miut, or riboy, miut, and riboy. So we'll say, what we're trying to then figure out is, we have a whole bunch of miutim, a whole bunch of exclusionary phrases or words. What are we excluding from each of them? So the Gemara says, akol aveda. So what do we need with the phrase akol aveda? Now that's a klal phrase. If somebody claims that an object was stolen, ba'aveda. So we'll say, look at Rashi for just a moment. The case over here is, motzi aveda, shetoin nignava, hemeno la'achar shematzasiyah. So we'll say, listen to this case. So I'm walking, I find Ruvain's watch. I call up Ruvain and say, I found your watch. Ruvain comes to go ahead and claim it, and what happens? I say, you know what, before he gets there, Nebach, I'm so sorry, it was stolen. it was stolen. They will say, now what happens if it turns out that's what? I was lying. It was stolen. It was stolen. I'm not lying at all. It was absolutely stolen. It just happens to be stolen in my pocket. So we'll say, so what's the halacha in that case? So again, the Gemara says, so atoin tainas ganav ba'aveda. If somebody claims that a lost object that they were guarding was stolen, mishalim tashlumi kefal. I will say they have to pay kefal. Shene emar, I'll call aveda asher yomar. Because the pasuk says for any lost object that he will say. So that phrase of any lost object comes to include even what? Comes to include even a lost object that was found and then subsequently stolen by the founder. Tanan Hasan, we learn there. Heichal pikdoni. So let's listen to this. So I come to deposit an object with Reuven. I give him a pikadon, and what happens? I come back and I say, "Where's my pikadon?" Amarle. Reuven responds, "Avad, I lost it." Mashbi'acha ani. So both say. So let's say I say to Reuven, "Take a shvua that you lost it and nothing else happened to it." Va'amar amen. And Reuven says, "Amen." Now both say. Now again, one of the ways in which you're able to take a shvua is by answering amen, meaning by affirming the words of a shvua, that has the status of a shvua as well. So I say to Reuven, I want you to take a shvua. Reuven says amen. Va'edim me'edim oso sha'achlu. And I will say, then what happens? Witnesses come along and say, we know that Reuven has the pikadon, or he consumed the pikadon, or he used the pikadon. What's that halacha? Mishalim esakeren. So we'll say, in that case again, he has to pay the principal. Now we'll say, now why is there no kefal in this case? Look at Rashi. Very simple. Mishalim is hakeren. Last white line on the top of Rashi. De'in kefal ele betainas ganav. We'll also remember again, kefal only applies in a specific case of what? A case of what? Of ganav. Where someone claims that something was stolen, again, not even by a gazlan, not publicly or overtly, but rather somebody broke into my house in the middle of the night and stole the object. So in this case over here, remember, Reuven is claiming that the object was lost. And therefore, again, when it turns out that he's a liar and he really stole the object, there's no din of kefal, there's just the din of keren. On the other hand, hoda al pi atzmo, we'll say, after just telling me that the object was lost, Reuven has a guilty conscience and he says again, I took it. The halacha is mishalim keren v'chomesh v'asham. He has to pay ultimately these additional payments of keren principal. Chomesh is an additional fifth, and the asham offering. Rashi says over here, hoda me'atzmo mishalim keren v'chomesh v'asham. First short line on top of Rashi. Tichsev o mikol asher yishav alav l'shaker. V'zeh asham gezelos. So this is a specific karban that's brought when someone admits that he lied under oath. So if you went ahead and if Reuven went ahead and lied, he took a false shvua that he didn't take the object, but in fact he did. So there's a threefold liability. He's got to pay back the keren, which is the principal. He has to pay an additional chomesh, a one-fifth penalty payment, plus he has to bring an asham, a guilt offering. Fine. Next, heichan pikdoni. I come back to Reuven. I say, Reuven, where is my pikadon? Amar lo nignav. He tells me it was stolen. Mashbi'ach ani. So Reuven says, do you swear to me that it was stolen? Va'amar amen. And Reuven says, yes. Va'idim me'idin oso she' ganvo. And witnesses come along and testify that what? That Reuven, in fact, stole the object. So we'll say, what's the halacha in that case? Mishalim tashlumei kefal. So we'll say again, that's a straight out case of kefal. He went ahead and he's claiming it was stolen, when in fact he stole it, he has to pay the kefal. Hoda me'atzmo. Now we'll say, this is very interesting. Let's say after taking the false shvua, before witnesses come along, Reuven admits that he lied. Right? So Reuven admits that he lied falsely. What's the halacha? Mishalim keren v'chomesh v'asham. Now we'll say, under those circumstances, he pays keren, the principal, chomesh, the additional fifth, and the asham gazel, the special asham offering for taking a false oath. Why no kefal? Why no kefal, Abosai? Because again, remember, as we're going to see, kefal is a knas. Kefal is a penalty payment. We have a principle in halacha which we're going to talk about that says, mode b'knas potter. That's when you admit a penalty payment, you are exempt ultimately again from that penalty payment. So we'll see that in greater depth. Katani miyah. So Abosai, so what do you see from here? Betoin tainas ganov to mishalim tashlumei kefal. Now, what do you see from here? You see from here that when, if I am the shomer, or when the shomer makes a claim that the object was stolen, but in fact, again, it turns out that he was lying, the halacha is he, the shomer, has to pay the kefel. But if somebody claims that the object was lost, lo mishalim tashlumi kefel. Under those circumstances, again, he does not have to pay kefel. So we'll say, again, it's very clear that the obligation, see, here's what's interesting. In both cases, if you notice, the shomer is effectively doing the same thing, which is what? He's stealing the object. But yet we see that the obligation for him to pay kefel is only in a situation where he claims the item was stolen. You know what it sounds like almost a little bit? It almost sounds like an Adam Zomerman type of situation, right? That which you claimed ultimately is imposed upon you. So you claim the object was stolen, therefore you created a ganav type of situation, a kefel circumstance. Turns out that you're the ganav, ultimately, again, you're going to be kefel. But if you claim that the object was lost, then the mice, you're going to be chay for the keren, you'll be on the hook for the principal, but you won't be chay for kefel. To which the Gemara says, so aval the toin tainas aval lo mishan tashlumi kefel, vafilu toin tainas ganav bishvuahu de mishan tashlumi kefel. Now we'll say, remember, here's what's interesting. The Brisa's cases are very specific. What's the case of the Brisa? I deposit an item with Reuven. Watch my item. Reuven comes along. I come back to Reuven to get my object. Reuven tells me the object was stolen. I tell him, do you swear? He says, yes. Turns out that he's a liar. So Adim come. So the halacha is, then he has to pay kefel. So the Gemara just picks up, by the way, it appears according to the Brisa, that that there are two factors in him having to pay kefel. Factor number one is what? That he makes a claim that the object was stolen. Factor number two is what? That he took a shvuah, that he swore that the item was stolen. So it sounds like over here, in the absence of the shvuah, he wouldn't have to pay kefel. To which he went, Ava shalom b'shvuah, ayinu mishalim tashlumi kefel. But ultimately, again, had he not sworn that the object was stolen, and then subsequently found out to be a liar, that he wouldn't pay kefel. Minhani mili. So where do we know that from, by the way? Meaning, up until now, we've heard this up until now. For the last 2 days, we've been operating with the principle that if somebody is entrusted with watching an object, claims that it was stolen, was found out that he was lying, meaning it was stolen, but he, the shomer, is the one who stole it, that he's chayiv kefel. Now the Brisa introduces to me this new idea that is only true when he swore that it was stolen. So it sounds like in the absence of a shvuah, the kefel payment would not be imposed upon him. So all the Gemara says is, where do you know that from, that a shvuah is necessary? The Tan Rabban, we learned, Imi Matzei Aganav, the Pasuk says, right, if the thief is found, Yishalim Shnayim. So both said, this is actually very interesting. So the Pasuk says, if you find the thief, so he has to pay kefel. So listen to this. Imi Matzei Aganav, Betomein Tainas Ganav Hakosav Medaber. Now both said, the Gemara is going to give a very novel interpretation here. So remember again, The pasuk is ki itein ish areihu kesef al kelim mishmar. If a person will give money or utensils to his friend to watch, the gunav mi beis ha'ish, and they are stolen from the home of the shomer, and mimatzei haganav yishalim shnayim. If the thief is found, the thief shall pay double payment kefel. So watch this. So the Gemara says imimatzei haganav b'toin tainas ganav akasav medaber. The Gemara is suggesting, Rav Osai, that when we say that the object is stolen by a ganav, so we're talking about a case of where the shomer makes a claim that it was stolen by a ganav. So the Gemara says, and therefore, but what's the real case? Who really stole it? The shomer himself. So the Torah phrased the pasuk as the thief stole it, but the case, the metzias of the case is where the actual shomer stole it. He's just claiming it was stolen by an outside party. So the Gemara says, "Ata omer between tanis ganav." So you want to set up the pasuk as dealing with a claim that a ganav stole it. O eino ella begonav atzmo, or maybe ultimately again, it's talking about a case where mamash the object was actually stolen. Here's the problem. Kishu omer imlo yimatzei haganav. See, I'll say, here's the problem. The problem is there's another pasuk. The very next pasuk says, imlo yimatzei haganav, if the thief is not to be found, v'nikrav balabayis el elokim, the balabas in this case though is the shomer, shall come before God, which means before Beis Din, and he'll take a shvuah, imlo shalach yadav imelech asra'eyu. He has to take a shvuah, ultimately again, that he did not misappropriate the object at all. So watch this. So the Gemara says, imlo yimatzei haganav, betoin tainas ganav akasav medaber. So we'll say, ultimately, again, that's talking about a case of where a person makes a claim that the object was stolen by another. So Tanya Idach, another bride, so we'll say, what you're going to see, the struggle over here is to try to figure out which cases, which, you know, Father, it's where, I'm sorry, Samach Gimel Amud Beis, 63b, so seven lines down to the wide lines. So Tanya Yidach, another bride, saw Imi Matzi Haganav, so listen to this, we're just trying to figure out exactly which psukim are referring to what. We have two psukim that seem to be talking about the same subject, but the shaila is, what are the cases? There are two possibilities as to the cases. Case number one is where Reuben is watching an object, he's watching my object, and the object is literally stolen by a Ganav. Case number two, and therefore the Torah says, if you find the Ganav, the Ganav has to be careful. Possibility number two is what? Where ultimately, again, Reuben claims that the object was stolen, but in fact, what happened? He stole it himself. To which the Torah says, if that's the case, Reuben has to pay kefal. So another brisa, emi matzi haganav, if the thief is found. So the Gemara posits, beganav atzma kasav medaber. So ultimately, that's talking about a case where the item was actually stolen by a ganav. As the Gemara says, kasav medaber, ato omer beganav atzmo, o eino ela betoin tainas ganav. How do you know that it's talking about a ganav itself? Maybe that pasuk is talking about where the shomer makes a claim that the object was stolen by a ganav, but in fact what? It was the shomer himself who stole it. Kishu omer, em lo yimatzi haganav, because the pasuk says, there's another pasuk that says, if the thief is not found, hari toin tainas ganav amur. That pasuk is talking about where I make a claim that it was stolen by a thief. Ha ma'ani mekayim imimatzi haganav. So we'll say, therefore the Torah says in the first pasuk, if the thief is found, then must be talking about beganav atzmo hakasov medaber. We'll say that case must be talking about a situation where the object was actually stolen by a third party. So the Gemara says, d'chuli alma mias im lo imatzi haganav betoin tainas ganav ksiv. See, let's go with what everybody agrees with. Everyone seems to agree that the case of Imlo Yimatze Haganav, which Rabbi Yosei is the second pasuk, that Shmos Chav Beis Zayin, everyone agrees that pasuk that says, if the thief is not found, then the Balabayis, the Shomer, has to come before Beis and take a Shvuah, that he did not misappropriate the item. Everyone is agreeing that is talking about a Toin Tainas Ganav. That's talking about a case where Reuven is making the claim that the object was stolen. So the Gemara says, "Miyas tuchuli alma miyas imlo imatzi ganav betoin tainas ganav ksiv." So my mashma. So we'll say, how do you know that pasuk is talking about a case where the shomer is making a claim that the object was stolen by someone else? Amar Rava. Rava says, "Imlo yimatzi kimasha amar." If it turns out, meaning the way we dash in the pasuk is "imlo yimatzi," if it's not found, kimasha amar. As the Shomer originally posited, namely, that the object was stolen by someone else, Ella Shu'atzmo Ganvo. So we'll say, what does it mean that the Ganav wasn't found? Meaning, what does it mean it wasn't found? It wasn't found because it's not as the Shomer originally claimed. The Shomer claimed that the object was stolen by an outside party. Turns out that's what? Shomer himself stole it. Shu'atzmo Ganav. Then what's the halacha? Yishalim Shnayim. So the Torah is teaching me that when you have Toin Tainas Ganav, when the Shomer himself claims that the object was stolen by a thief, and it turns out to be not true, the halacha is what? That the Shomer has to pay kef, has to pay double. Uminalam de b'shvuah. Now, boss, remember how we got into this whole discussion? Because the Brisa seemed to set it up that what? That the only time the Shomer has to pay kefel, if it turns out that he stole the object himself, is when the mice, again, he took a shvuah to that effect. So how do we know that it's true that it's take a shvuah? The sanya, because we learned in our brisa, v'nikrav balabayis ela elokim, because the pasuk says, the balabas, the shomer, will come before God. What does that mean? L'shvuah. Both say that refers to the fact that he took a shvuah. So l'maisa again, what happens over here? We see that halacha l'maisa is only a din of kefal, right? In the case of hatoin tainas ganav, in the case where the shomer himself says that the object was stolen, but both say turns and then what? Takes a shvuah to that effect, and then it turns out that he lied. That's the case where the shomer has to pay kefal. So the Gemara says, the shvuah o ein elalitin. How do you know that v'nikra balabayis elalokim means for shvuah purposes? Maybe it means for din purposes. That ultimately, again, he came before the Beis Din, not to take a shvuah, but just to adjudicate the case. Ne'emar shlichus yad lamata, because Rabbi Yosef uses the phrase of shalach yado later on. Ne'emar shlichus yad lamala, and it says shalach yado in the earlier pasuk. Ma lahalom l'shvua, just as earlier Rabbi Yosef shlichus yad refers to shvua, afkan l'shvua. So to over here means for shvua as well. So Rabbi Yosef, therefore you see what? Therefore you see that only in a case where the shomer first swears to the effect that the item is stolen, and then was discovered to be lying about the Shavua and found to have stolen himself, that's when he's going to have to go ahead and pay kefal. So we'll say, this is just important. So what we've arrived at now is two things. Obviously, if a thief steals an item and is then found, so the Maaseh is going to have to pay kefal. In a case of what we call Toin Tainas Ganov, where a shomer claims that the object was stolen, and the shomer was then found to have lied. So if the shomer took an oath that in fact the item was stolen, and it was found out again, he lied about the theft and he lied under oath, under those circumstances, the shomer himself will have to pay kefal. But it appears that had the shomer made a false claim without taking an oath to that effect, he would be chayiv for what? He'd be chayiv for carrying the principal. He'd also be chayiv for what? The additional fifth payment, the chomesh, for ultimately against swearing falsely, plus an asham gazelos, a karbanic obligation, ultimately for taking a false oath. So it says the Gemara, Bishlam Aman Damer Chad Begana V'Chad B'Toinat. So we'll say, so now remember, as we said before, we have two psukim. So it makes sense according to the Aman Damer, who says that the first pasuk is talking about a case of where the object was really stolen, and the second pasuk is talking about a case of where the shomer made a claim that the object was stolen, but in fact he's lying. Therefore, Hainu D'Chsivi Trei Kroy. Now I understand why I need two psukim. First pasuk teaches me about a case where the object is actually stolen. Second pasuk teaches me about a case where the shomer claims it was stolen, but in fact turns out to have stolen it himself. I understand why I need two psukim. Elamam Damar Tarvai between Tanis Ganov Trei Kroy Lamli. But also according to the opinion who says, yeah, both psukim are talking about a case of what? Where the shomer is claiming the object was stolen. The shomer is claiming the object was stolen, but in fact he lied. So why do I need two psukim that seemingly teach me the same concept? To which the Gemara says, Amri, chad limi'ute tainas avad. One is to go ahead and teach me what? One is to teach me, Abosai, that if the shomer claims that the object was stolen, swore to that effect, and then was found to be a liar, he has to pay kefal. And the other one comes to exclude the case of avad. Namely, that if the shomer claims, I lost the object was lost, and even if he swore to that effect and was found to have lied under oath, the aloch is a bosai. He's going to have to pay keren, and he's going to have to pay chomesh, and he's going to have to bring an asham gazelos. But what? He doesn't have to pay kefal. Why? Because the obligation of kefal is only when you claim the object was stolen. Uleman da'amar, chad v'ganav v'chad b'tuayin tainas ganav, d'lo mi'asr l'mi'utei tainas avad minale. So, basically, according to the opinion he uses, one pasuk to teach me about a case where the bikadon was stolen, and a second one to teach me where the shomer claimed it was stolen. So, therefore, there's not an extra pasuk. Where does he learn out that if the shomer claimed that the object was lost, and even swore to that effect, that lamais again the shomer would not be chayiv in kefel? To which the gemara says, minale, meganov haganov. From the fact of also that the pasuk had just said ganov, but instead what? Uses an extra hay. The extra hay ultimately teaches me that he's only chayiv in a case where what? Where the Maisei claims the object was stolen. But if the Shomer claims that the object was lost, he is not, and even if he swears to that effect, he's not chayiv in kefal. Uleman d'amar tarvav b'toin tanis ganav, d'miyet letoin tanis avad. So I'll say, and according to the opinion who says that both psukim teach me toin tainas ganav, and therefore again, one pasuk is coming to exclude the case of toin tainas avad, where it's claiming the object is lost. So ganav, haganav, my darish bay, what does he dash from the extra hay of haganav? So the Gemara says, Amr lecha, mi bali the chidra b'chiyah bar Abba. It's necessary to teach you the ruling of b'chiyah bar Abba, because those b'chiyah bar Abba say. So the Gemara says, l'chidra b'chiyah bar Abba. I'm sorry, l'chidra b'chiyah bar Abba, Amr Rabbi Yochanan. Amr b'chiyah bar Abba, Amr Rabbi Yochanan, hatoin tainas gana b'pikadon. If somebody claims, ultimately, they're watching, Reuven's watching a pikadon, and he claims that it was stolen, meshalim tashlume kefel. Ultimately, he'll have to pay tashlume kefel. I'll feel a double portion. He's found out to have stolen it himself. Similarly, tavach umachar mishalim tashlumi arba vechamisha. But say along those same lines, what's going to happen? Lemaisa again, if the thief claimed that the shar I was watching was stolen, shechted, and sold, and then it's turned out that what? that he's the one who did those very things, he will have to go ahead and what? He'll have to go ahead and pay the arba v'chamisha as well. But let's just do one more line. Leman damer chad v'ganov v'chabed toim tanas ganov. So according to Madam, who says that one pasuk is used for ganov and one pasuk is used for toim tanas ganov. The high ganov haganov afke lemiute tanas avad. So ultimately, again, he uses the extra hay to teach me that if the shomer claims that the object was stolen, he's not subject to kefal. Reb Chiya bar Abba minole. It will say, where does he learn out the halacha of Reb Chiya bar Abba? Namely, that if the shomer claims that the sheep was stolen, shechted and sold, and he's found out to have done those things himself. How do we know that he has the arba v'chamisha? We learn out from a hekish, ve'ein meshivin al hekisha, and there is no refutation ultimately again on the hekish. Now we'll say, now what's the hekisha? Look at the second one on Rashi. With this, we'll stop. Hekisha hu kevan dismichi lahadadi hani kroi. We'll say, since these two psukim are right next to each other, iskish ganov v'toin tanas ganov lahadadi. Ultimately, the Torah is coming to compare the cases of where the object was actually stolen to the case of where there was a claim that the object was stolen. Ma ganav meshalim tashlum arba v'chamisha, just like the ganav pays a penalty payment of four or five times, so too ultimately again the one who claims ultimately again that the object was stolen will also have to pay four or five times. So we'll stop over here. I know it's a lot, but just understand, to condense this conversation very simply, what we have is two psukim, and the two psukim seem to be saying the same thing. So the Gemara just has two different ways of interpreting the psukim. According to one man, according to one approach, the first pasuk is talking about a case. We'll say both are the same case, which is, I'm depositing an object with Reuven. Reuven's watching it. I come back. I want it back. And what happens? It's stolen. So according to the first man, the pasuk is talking about a case where the object was actually stolen. So the Torah is teaching me that when we find the ganav has to pay kefal. Second pasuk is talking about what? Where Lemaisa, again, Reuven's claiming it was stolen, but then it turns out, he takes a shvut, and it turns out that what? He stole it himself. Torah is teaching me that Toin Tainas Ganav, when one claims that the object was stolen, the Shomer has to be kefal himself. That's the first Mandamar. Second Mandamar says a very novel idea. No, both Psukim and Bosa are talking about Toin Tainas Ganav. Both Psukim are talking about the same case where I deposit the object with Reuven. Reuven ultimately again claims the object was stolen, and it turns out that what? He is the thief. And the Torah is teaching me that he has to pay kefal. Now, why would the Torah have to repeat the same case twice? That mandarim is coming to suggest that it's coming to exclude the case of Aveda. That Lemais, again, to teach me that only in a situation where the Shomer claims the object was stolen, does the Shomer have an obligation of kefal. But if the Shomer were to claim the object was lost, even though he takes a false shvuah to that effect, he'll be chayef for Karen, he'll be chayef for Chomesh, he'll be chayef for Asham Gzelos, but he will not be chayef for kefal. Meretz Hashem will continue with this sugya tomorrow. Sorry? That's right.